All right, welcome back. Here we are, wrapping up the weekend edition of the KE Report. We're going to now step just a little bit more away from the markets and talk more big picture news, data, and an outlook for next year, more into central banks and where money has been flowing. We are chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also editor of the Mark to Market blog. We will post a link to that blog in the weekend show posting. Mark, we didn't have the opportunity to get you on pretty much this whole month. And look, there's been some interesting news developments. Still a bit of gray area around some of these events, but it does have people talking about how it could impact next year, especially. China's been in the news a lot, shifting away from their zero COVID. Bank of Japan came out with a more or less surprise statement regarding stepping away from their yield curve control, as well as another couple news events. Mark, take us through some of the key developments in December that you think could have an impact or should have an impact as we head into next year.
Yeah, I think you're right, Corey. One of the big things has been China's pivot away from its zero COVID policy, leading to a surge of COVID cases and apparently fatalities in China. And I think many people are trying to look beyond that, ironically, and look for China then, as it moves away from zero COVID, then it experiences a surge in cases and then comes a recovery. And so I think I think that's helped explain why the Chinese currency has strengthened. Past 5 days, it's strengthened more than 1%. Almost a 1/3%, which is quite a large move for China. I was on a Bloomberg TV show the other day, and they were saying, well, if China reopens, won't this make the Fed's work more troublesome? Won't it be a challenge for the Fed? And I kind of think about what Powell said at the last press conference, talking about the different elements of inflation, and the one he focused on as the biggest challenge is core service prices in the U.S., core services. So outside of food and energy services, we're talking about like medical, we're talking about shelter costs. And so I think that when it comes to inflation in the U.S., it's much better to think about it being a homegrown issue rather than coming from overseas. But we did see the Chinese stock market rally as people began anticipating the shift away from zero COVID. But I think China remains a wild card. When does it recover? Some cities are looking at things like non-economic measures, trying to get beyond what government statistics may conceal from us. People are looking at like subway usage, traffic patterns. And some large cities like Beijing, it looks like people are saying that it might be past its first peak. I sort of wonder, just based on our experience, about maybe a second wave will come. But the focus now is really shifting away from some of those large cities to like another set, like including Shanghai. So how fast does China recover, I think, is a key determinant of the global investment climate. Think about demand for commodities. I think one of the takeaways is that China is going to make more efforts to stimulate their economy. So net-net, that's going to be a positive, especially for those of us concerned, watching, looking at Europe and the U.S., thinking that we're headed for a recession. The other big issue that took place, I think, is the, as you mentioned, the Bank of Japan moving away. With they did is they doubled the band for its 10-year government bond from it was allowed to move 25 basis points around zero, and now it's going to be allowed to move 50 basis points around zero. So the center remains the same. They just doubled the band. And of course, what that means in this environment is that the yield jumps up to the top end of the band. The Bank of Japan, ironically, that's what most people are focused on. This, what people think is the shift away from the yield curve control. But Corey, what they've done this month is it looks like they bought a record amount of government bonds to defend their new cap and a signal that this wasn't really the kind of shift that many people in the market might think it is. They bought a record amount of Japanese government bonds this month of December. Dollar yen, key support held when they made this announcement, surprising the market. It fell to 130. Remember, dollar yen peaked above 150 in October. and it got down to 130. It took a bounce up to almost 135, and now it's come up again as we head into the new year. So Japanese policy, you know, it's the last of the major countries with negative interest rates, with a negative interest rate overnight policy. And, you know, nobody wants to be bit by that same dog twice. And so people are afraid and positioning accordingly that the Bank of Japan could surprise us again. And I'm reluctant to see that. I think that what they did was an adjustment, of course, but that a combination of government subsidies to help lower inflation, the strength of the yen, and the weakness of the underlying economy. Industrial production has fallen for the last 3 months, for example. Retail sales were supposed to be up 0.2%. They fell over 1% in November. So all these things, I think, combined to having a softer inflation outlook going forward, that should take off some pressure from the Bank of Japan.
Well, Mark, it really is an interesting environment we're going into in 2023, because while we may have some domestic issues with our inflation in the United States, there's a global issue with inflation. Almost every country is facing it. So I would say that there's certain things that are maybe domestic for each country, but there's the whole world is feeling higher inflation. And while it is moderating and coming down, things like the services you mentioned are key, because those aren't supply chain related as much as some of the goods and commodities are. And a lot of those are just reflective of prices have gone up for the consumer in almost every area. And so as we move into next year, to the point you made about recession, there is those concerns about a contracting economy that are starting to tug people's attention away from the inflation picture. But it seems like the central banks are going to have their work cut out for them this year, because they've all been tightening in unison. And now what we've seen with the Bank of England, you know, backstopping its bonds, and what you just highlighted with the Bank of Japan buying bonds, people are extrapolating that out, Mark, that, hey, eventually the Fed's probably going to have to start buying some bonds as well, and so are some of these other countries. What do you make of the path the central banks are on as we head into 2023?
Yeah, so you raised two important points, I think. One is that there are some central banks, like maybe Poland, Brazil, who would like to think that they're done raising interest rates. There's other central banks that have already slowed down back to 25 basis points, like the Reserve Bank of Australia. But for the Federal Reserve, the ECB, the Bank of England, and the say, Bank of Canada, I think that we've got to anticipate further rate hikes. I think that somewhere around the middle of the year or before, most of these large central banks will be done. And that's partly because of reaching levels, high enough levels, seeing inflation pressures ease, and also weakness of the domestic economies, which, remember, when it's trying to set monetary policy, what they do today might have an impact a year from now on the real economy, a year and a half from now on inflation measures. So it's a difficult game here. But the other point I bring out is that we are seeing declines in some headline measures. Like today, as we talk here on December 30th, Spanish CPI came in. And it fell from 6.7% to 5.6%, much more than people expected. And the reason, and I think that ECB President Lagarde sort of warned investors about this, is that many countries are using fiscal policy to help address inflation. What I mean by that is that giving more subsidies for energy, or subsidizing through tax breaks consumption of energy and food. And this is lowering inflation. So as I mentioned, in Spain, their headline inflation fell from 6.7% to 5.6%, a big move. It's about half of what it was at its peak. But the core measure of inflation, excluding food and energy, that jumped to 6.9%, new cyclical highs for Spanish core inflation, even though that headline inflation fell so sharply. So I think we're going to see this throughout Europe, and we'll probably see this in Japan as well. Their new fiscal program is aimed to help lower inflation. And so what we've got to be aware of then is that these are temporary measures. Maybe they run to the spring, maybe they run a little bit afterwards, but that they're going to come to an end. And when they do, you're going to see an adjustment. And I think that's going to be the challenge for central banks, is that some of these measures have changed the optics without really changing what's going on underneath the surface.
So, Mark, what do you think central banks do next year then? Undoubtedly, we're going to have a pause from the Fed, probably from a lot of other central banks. However, some central banks are actually still on the hiking path, at least early on in the year. And look, inflation, it has come down, but very few people are expecting inflation to come back down to 2 or even 3 or even 4%. But a lot of people keep on throwing out this word pivot, that the central banks are pivoting. I consider a pivot when they actually start cutting rates. How does that all play into next year? Do central banks actually start cutting next year?
Well, I think that's a good question, because I think that this is where the tension is right now between the markets and the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve, Powell was pretty clear. He said it's too early to even think about cutting rates. But the market is pricing a rate cut in. And when I say the market, what I'm looking at, if you want to play this from home, is the difference between the yield of the September 2023 Fed Funds futures and the December contract. 30 basis points. That is to say, the December yield is 30 basis points below the September contract. And the only way you really get that is with a rate cut. And so I'd say the market for the Federal Reserve, Fed Funds futures, are already pricing in that rate cut for the late next year. Now, before we get there, though, I think that, you know, we have the next FOMC meeting, end of January, first day of February concludes. The market is saying the Fed's going to downshift again to 25 basis points. As we talk here today, the market's pricing in 25 basis points, done deal hike. But they recognize about a 1 in 3 chance the Fed goes 50 basis points instead. So the base case is 25, and then the tail risk is on a larger hike, 50 basis points. And I think that would probably happen between now and late in the month, even though I think we get a relatively soft non-farm payrolls for the private sector. And we probably have that distortion still between the establishment survey, which gives us the number of jobs, non-farm payrolls, and the household survey that generates the unemployment rate. Because people we've had some bad winter in parts of the country, and that's going to probably affect people's ability to go to work. And so I'd watch for that. And we'll also get another CPI number around January 12th, and I look for that to be a softish number too. But despite that, to your point, inflation is not falling probably fast enough for officials. And I could see speculation increasing towards a 50 basis point hike at the next FOMC meeting. Now, what's interesting about that is that even though the ECB says they never pre-commit, ECB President Lagarde pre-committed to a 50 basis point rate hike for the ECB. And that's going to come the day after the Fed meets. But I think in general, we should anticipate is that the central banks get done, that they front load the rate hikes in the first part of this year. Maybe it goes into Q2, but then do take that pause to really like check how the economies are doing. And remember, this stuff takes place with a lagged effect, and that's a hard thing to manage.
Yeah, Mark, it's going to be interesting to see how it goes. But to your point, it seems like most central banks are going to be wrapping up in the first half of this next year. And then they're probably going to pause for longer than people are expecting just to see how this works out. But you can't blame the markets for having that dichotomy between what they expect and what the Fed expects. Because let's remember, Powell said they weren't even thinking about hiking rates until 2023. And we just saw the most aggressive Fed rate hiking cycle in 2022. That we've seen in decades. So sometimes what they say and what they do are two different things. The other thing that's been a key player this year, though, Mark, is the U.S. dollar. It's been a counterbalance against all the markets, whether it's the commodities, the general equities, the cryptocurrencies. And it was a big year for the U.S. dollar, surging higher from the high 90s up until over 114, and then rolling over the last couple months as other central banks' activity buoyed the pound, buoyed the yen, and buoyed the euro. Do you think that trend will continue to next year where other currencies advance on the dollar, or do you expect the dollar to stay king and bounce back higher as we move into next year?
Yeah, that's a very good question, Chad, because that's really, for me, the tension is that I do think the dollar has turned. That is to say that the big rally since, ironically, January 1st, 2021, when people were protesting in Washington, D.C., that is when the dollar bottom, the euro bottom, the euro bottom, the dollar index bottom. And we had an incredible 2-year rally in the dollar that essentially took us to levels on a valuation basis that were like unprecedented. And I'm looking at, for that, I'm looking at the OECD's measure of purchasing power parity. And what we've seen happen in Q4 is the dollar has come off. So I take a look at the top G10 currencies. Nine of them have appreciated by more than 5% against the U.S. dollar this quarter. The exception is the Canadian dollar, up less, about call it 2%, maybe a little bit less. And after such a big move, 5% against most of those majors, that there's usually a period of consolidation correction. And what we've seen in December, I think, is primarily consolidation, not really a correction. And so for me, some of the momentum indicators are still a bit stretched, but I think that something important has taken place, and that is that for this 2 years, the Federal Reserve, we've seen the Federal Reserve to be among the most aggressive of the major central banks, and combination, right, rate hikes and balance sheet adjustment. But what's happened in the last 2 months is that that pendulum has swung more towards Europe's favor. Give you an example, the U.S. balance sheet, the Federal Reserve's balance sheet, has shrunk by almost 2%. Because of the ECB's emphasis on loans, or about a quarter of its balance sheet with loans, and forcing people to, or I shouldn't say forcing, but strongly encouraging them for prepayment, their balance sheet has shrunk by almost 9% since the end of October. What this means is that the sharp tightening of European conditions. So, for example, the U.S. 10-year premium was about 190 basis points over Germany. It's now about 130. The two-year spread, which I track for its influence on the exchange, foreign exchange market, the two-year spread peaked at about 250 basis points late October. It's trading around 170 basis points now, from 250 down to 170. This is a huge adjustment in the kind of things that I think that move capital. And that's really what I'm interested in when I look at the foreign exchange market, because I know that the market for capital is so much bigger than the market for goods. For the market for goods, of course, you'd be looking at trade balances. And it still is, I think, the traditional approach. But ultimately, given the size of the capital markets, I tend to focus on things that move capital. And that's why I give you those things about the balance sheet and the 10-year and 2-year interest rate differentials. So the dollar is actually finishing the year on a soft note. The euro is above 107. Sterling is near 121. Remember, sterling bottoms at 103.50. In late September, we're trading one over 120 right now. And so we've seen big moves in the Aussie and Kiwi as well. And so that's what I'm really torn between, is a short-term risk of a pullback in the foreign currencies because they've been bought so aggressively in Q4, and a bigger sense, a stronger conviction that the dollar's big, big rally has come to an end.
Mark, those are massive moves for some of the largest markets out there. We don't usually see these kind of swings. And that's why I think it's been so noteworthy. Plus, you get these carryover effects, right? So if it plays out the way that you think it does here, where the dollar, broadly, its run is over, maybe we don't get this waterfall decline like we have had in the last couple months. What else does that impact? Where should investors be looking to understand that if this trend truly has changed, these other sectors will either benefit or be hurt by it?
I know one sector you follow pretty closely, Corey, in the commodity side, and you would associate a weaker dollar with rising commodity prices generally. The problem, though, is that is about the demand side. If the U.S. and Europe are, whether it's a technical recession or just an economic slowdown, you have to wonder about demand. And what happens in a rising interest rate environment and a weak economy environment, you know, that demand destruction might blunt the effect, the impact that a weaker dollar could have. But generally speaking, you would see a weaker dollar being correlated or consistent with higher commodity prices.
Okay. Well, Mark, we're going to wrap it up here. We're out of time for this segment. Pleasure having you back on the show. Looking forward to chatting with you throughout 2023. Probably another year of, well, crazy moves, but boy, oh boy, this year is going to go down in history, and it has a lot of people scratching their heads moving into next year, wondering if it's going to be as bad as it was this year. Mark, thank you as always for your time. I hope you have a very happy new year. And again, we look forward to chatting with you in 2023.
Thanks. Good luck. Happy New Year for everybody.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.